Teachers, good morning. Let me welcome you, everybody in the room. I think now it's 10 past of 5 past, I don't know, but it's about that, so we're late. We're waiting for the members also, we're waiting for the others to come, but I see now the house is full and we can start. And I think everybody has got an agenda in front of him or her. Let me welcome you again. Before we start, we are going to introduce ourselves because we must know each other in the room. And we are going to start in the agenda in the Buisa event because they are rushing for the flight. And then we'll follow with other presentations. Let me introduce myself. I am Noru Tando Kagani from the Eastern Cape. I'm the chairperson of the Land and Environmental Affairs in the NSOP. I'll go straight to my whip to introduce himself.
My name is Olson.
With a mic, brother.
My name is Gauta Mokgoro. I'm a member of this committee and a whip as well. Thank you.
Good morning, all. My name is Daryl Worth. I'm a member of this committee, and I'm from the Free State Province.
Morning, all. I am Nosile Verema Kadla from the KwaZulu-Natal, a member of this committee.
I'll go straight to my secretary, starting from my left.
Asgar Bawa, committee secretary. Thank you.
Deshni Pale, content advisor. Good morning, I'm Matilda Natago. I'm the executive secretary to the chairperson.
All the parliamentary secretaries must introduce themselves before we go to the officials. In the mic.
My name is Mokoto Nachoma. I'm the committee assistant, parliamentary staff. Thank you.
I'm Kolisile Lobi, committee assistant.
Yeah.
Morning. I'm Foyiswa Papu, secretary to the provincial whip. Thank you.
Honorable.
I'm Mangena Shabangan from the office of the chairperson of the NCLP.
Good morning, my name is Marcus Kwame from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm Lisa McCourt, the Chief Operating Officer for the Department of Environmental Affairs, representing the DG, who's unfortunately in New York on official business. So I am leading the delegation from Dear site, I am also, I think for my sins, the chairperson of the Buyisa IBAC interim board that is responsible for the winding up. So I'm there in both those capacities is why I'm here. I'll let the rest of the team introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Tanya Ablamsa. I'm the CEO of the South African National Biodiversity Institute, SANBI.
Morning, Chair and members. I'm Christopher Willis. I also represent SANBI.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'm Hanli Skuman. I'm the Chief Director for Corporate Governance in the Department, and I'm working closely on the Buyisa EVAX issue.
Good morning. My name is Wilma Luch. I'm from Department of Environmental Affairs, representing DDG Biodiversity and Conservation today.
Good morning. My name is Mamusa Africa. I'm the Director for General Waste and Special Projects from Environmental Affairs.
Good morning. My name is Isham Abada. I'm the Deputy Director General for Environmental Quality and Protection.
Good morning. My name is Dimpo Makotoko, the Chief Director of Business Performance in Environmental Affairs.
Good morning. My name is Simon Maleti. I'm the Director, Office of the DDG, Biodiversity and Conservation.
Good morning. I'm Andre Yodan from SABC Radio News.
We go straight to Buisa Ibeki to have the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just introduce this topic. This has been on your books for quite a while, to get feedback on the performance of the Section 21 company that is responsible for the recycling, expanding of the network, etc. Subsequently, there has been some developments in this regard, and as the Minister communicated to you in a letter, we would rather be updating the committee on what the current status is, which is the winding up of this company and the absorption of the functions into the department. I'm going to ask Hanli Skuman, who is the project manager and is also the vice chair of the interim board, to just do the presentation for the committee, and then we will respond to your questions, Madam Chair.
Good morning, members. Again, the presentation will basically, if you can start. Thank you. The outline is just to take you through the background of why was Buisa Ibeki set up in the first place, then the purpose of why we started with a review on the company, the options which we considered going forward, and then the preferred options that we are implementing in at this stage. Buisa Ibeki was set up as a Section 21 company flowing from a memorandum of agreement that was signed between government, labour and business to offset the perceived negative social and economic impact of the plastic bag levy that was introduced. The purpose of the plastic bag levy was to promote the reuse of carrier bags and to enforce the minimum thickness of the bags, which would promote the recycling of the bags. The objective then of Buisa Ibeki was to support the expansion of collector networks, to establish rural SMMEs and create additional capacity within NGOs, to through these activities also lead to job opportunities, to create new jobs, and as well as to improve the skills and to reskill workers in the plastics field. The department, as the sole funder of the company, was very concerned about, amongst other things, about the governance of the company, the expenditure of the company, as well as the performance of the company. We therefore decided to do a review of the company to determine whether the objectives as set out in this MOA have been met, and if not, what contributed to this. I must just emphasize that the purpose of the review and the recommended way forward is informed by the department's desire to ensure that we achieve the original objectives of Buisa, for which Buisa Ibeki was set up, to ensure value for money or cost effectiveness, to ensure transparency and accountability, to prevent duplication with work already done within the department or similar work done within the department, and to ensure that there's minimum job losses or disruptions in the functions of a company during the transition to a new or revised structure. Then just to highlight the findings of a review with regard to the governance arrangements, as I mentioned already, the MOA made specifically provisions, therefore, that this Section 21 company be set up. As a Section 21 company, Buisa Ibeki was supposed to comply with the Companies Act, whereas the Memorandum of Understanding between the department and the Buisa itself, as well as the Articles of Association, requires the company to comply with the Public Finance Management Act. Treasury is also of the view as as an entity fully funded by government, it should comply with the Public Finance Management Act. Currently, Buisa operates with a combination of rules, and they are not fully complying with either the Companies Act or the Public Finance Management Act. since its inception, that we have never had a business plan or a strategic plan, or and it's and that, as I said, they've never had a strategic plan, and that makes it very difficult for the company to really have a vision of where they want to go. And we found looking through their business plans that their activities was not always in line with their stated objectives. With regard to expenditure, we found that from its inception, they've never been able to spend the allocation, and they had very high administrative costs compared to similar programs run within the department. With regard to activities, we specifically looked at, when we did the review at the 2010-11 business year, financial year, and we found that they've not met the targets set out in the business plan. With regard to effectiveness of the company, it was very difficult to measure the objectives, the effectiveness in terms of those objectives, the creation of SMMEs, the job creation, as in some cases they only started measuring these things as late as in 2010. On others, we have no statistics at this stage when we did the review, even in the beginning of this year. As I already mentioned, there were similar functions is performed within the department. For instance, we have a working on waste program in our social responsibility program, which is the EPWP program, as well as there seems to be a very negative perception in the public and the media with regard to the company. The conclusion that we reached that was that Buriza failed to meet its objectives as per the founding MOA. And the core problem was the fact that it was set up as a Section 21 company, but it was solely funded with public funds. The two acts require very different requirements in terms of governance, and the current structure didn't allow for, or only allowed for, very limited oversight by the department. We therefore considered three options on a possible way forward. The first one was to continue with the current structure as a Section 21 company, but then revise the articles of association to try to resolve the governance and management problems. This option was not preferred because the confusion with regard to the governing legislation would remain, and so basically they would still have to comply with both acts, and that would not make sense. As well as the structure required to do this, to comply with these acts, is very expensive. The preferred option for some time then was to wind up the company and start to establish a public entity, but in light of the government's support for the rationalization of entities, and especially that this would be a very small entity, this was not a preferred option, and as I mentioned already, similar functions are already performed within the department, and as far as possible, we should try to do this then in-house. We then decided that the preferred option would be then to wind up the company and to absorb the functions and the staff within the department. The reason why this is our preferred option was informed by that we want to ensure that there's minimum job losses, and we wanted to retain the original objectives for which the EBAC was set up. As I mentioned, it's similar functions within the department. One of the objectives that Buriza tried to achieve was regional presence, which we already have through similar programs within the department. Compared to other project funding, the cost in our department is much lower. We spend around 12% on administrative costs compared to the rest that's spent directly on project funding. And this would also allow for legal certainty with regard to governance. The Public Finance Management Act will apply, and we will follow all the department's financial policies, and this would significantly reduce the risk to the department. The board of Buriza then signed a special resolution on the 14th of July. The last signature was obtained to voluntarily wind up the company. As agreed with the board, the department appointed KPMG then to facilitate the winding up process. In the interim, Buriza will remain a corporate body, but will cease with its activities, and it will carry on with its business, except as so far it's required that is beneficial for the winding up thereof. Buriza is allowed to continue with its to operate under the strict control and management of the board. And as Lisa mentioned, this is basically a departmental interim board that takes now care of the operations of BRESA. We foresee that this will unfold over the next 3 to 6 months, after which all the staff and the functions of the BRESA will be absorbed within the department. The department remains very committed that no jobs will be lost as a result of the absorption of the functions into the department, and that the conditions of employment will be honored of all employees. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your very short, straightforward presentation. I think now I will give the honorable members. Is there any presentation that is only one for the BRESA? Okay. I'll give the honorable members to ask questions. I think all of them want to ask. I'll start with Honorable Makala, follow Honorable West, and also Honorable Mkhoro. On that sequence.
Thank you, Chair. On page 6, under review findings, there's duplication of functions here. It is said that there's duplication of functions with BRESA and the department. And on page 10, under way forward, it is said that the department appointed KPMG to facilitate the one winding up. I don't understand. Why is it like this? Why is this company there? Yet it's not, it is said it's difficult to measure effectiveness. If it is not effective, why is it there? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, without being negative, what makes you think that now you're going to declare it, what, a 21 company, and it'll be subject to the PFMA, that you think it's going to be more effective? I'm just having a look at the unofficial version, or the first version that was given out, review findings. They never managed to spend the allocated budget. There is no figures available except for the last few months of the actual tonnage of plastic recycled. Of 36 buyback centres developed or supported, only 16 provided reports. No indication of jobs created. In fact, they didn't even manage to spend their budget, and 60% of it was spent on administration. Do you think this is really the effective way to go? We appreciate the recycling. We also appreciate the fact that people shouldn't lose jobs. But is this the way to go? Would it not be better to privatize the whole thing? Is this, in fact, a money-making organization, or does it just hope to break even at best and just recycle plastic as per, what do you call it, environmental affairs? Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. I see here the host of issues that the company never been able to accomplish. And I see somewhere, I've lost the page now, that there was no strategic planning. And I think because of lack of strategic planning. Strategic planning means actually there was no business plan. They just started operating. Now, in the absence of a business plan, how could you have expected to achieve your goals without anything to guide you towards it? I would like really to get a thorough explanation how one can get into business where there is no business plan.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhoro. I think most of my questions have been asked. from the honourable members, but I want to know by when will the process be concluded, and also what is the impact on the areas where buyback centres are located on the communities. I think it's all that you just can answer those few questions.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start in the order that the question was asked. In terms of, and I'll ask the DDG for EQP to add if I miss something else, as well as the relevant director. In terms of the duplication of functions, what our review found, I think I just want to start a little bit with a little bit of background in terms of what the real concern is. When the plastic bag regulations was promulgated, there was, especially from the labor lobby, a lot of concerns about the potential negative socioeconomic job losses, specifically as a result of the requirements of both the plastic bag levy as well as the sickness requirements that came out of that. So in that process, then NECLAC was consulted, and NECLAC with government, the plastic bag industry or the packaging industry and labor, then agreed that this company needs to be established, and they prescribed that it must be a Section 21 company. And I think that is where a Section 21 company solely funded with public money, because the thinking was that the money would come from the levy. But as you know, that's not how Treasury work. Treasury give you an allocation. They don't link the income, the revenue, directly to the outcome. All the revenue go to the receiver of revenue to Treasury, and they apportion the funds that come from there. So there is no direct link. So what we have is a Section 21 company that is governed by the Companies Act. So the entire governance is through a board, which is a board of these three stakeholders, which is labor, the plastic bag industry. They were the board that governed this. So in terms of the business processes, the reporting, the financial, etc., there was no accountability to government. There was accountability to a board of a Section 21 company. But we gave the money, taxpayers gave the money for the work. So there need to be accountability in terms of the PFMA as well. And that is where the real thing went wrong. But let me then just talk about the question specifically, because I think that background is important when we get to the questions around the strategic planning, why have they not accomplished, why did it take so long before we are where we are. In terms of the duplication of functions, there are certain things that are not duplicated as such and will be absorbed, and the buyback centers is part of that. But there are things in terms of the cleanups, the support to SMMEs, the education, the job creation, etc., which is duplicated very specifically through working on waste, which is expanded public work programs, which is managed through the SRPP program in the department. So we have this company that had company costs associated with it that is doing the same thing that is done with a government department without those company-related costs associated with it. So that was the issue around the duplication. In terms of the appointment of KPMG, I think what members must understand what winding up means is that this company would cease to exist. There will no longer be a Buyisa eBag, and our time frame for that is by December of this year. Buyisa eBag ceases to exist. There's no longer, they are basically liquidated. But we don't use the terminology of liquidation because there is financial assets and liabilities associated with it. It is actually the functions are getting absorbed in the department. Why we've appointed KPMG? KPMG.
Interruption? You want to get in before she finishes?
Yes, I want to interrupt this line of explanation. It's totally unacceptable. As I've been listening to the introduction here, there are many people here with powerful positions, DDG, chief directors, and how could they, having been in those positions, allow a company to function without a business plan? And in her explanation, there's also a mention of the fact that there was no accountability. I don't think we should waste our time to listen. These people must go back and go and prepare a better something and explain these things, why this omission. Thank you.
Honorable Mporo. I was trying to query them because even the presentation itself, I'm not happy about this presentation also. I'm not totally happy about this. But as Honorable Mporo said, but I don't know the other members, but I'm still querying about this presentation, because in this presentation it does not give us any guidance. What is it happening? What are the budget? What is it? It's just a blank thing. I don't know what are the other honorable members. I'll get it by them. And also the minister wrote a letter to the committee to explain the situation.
Honourable Chair, I think we are in... sorry, ma'am.
Chair? I was to second Honourable Mporo. Because my first question was why is this company there while it's not effective? Why is it there in the first place?
Yes.
Chair, they did say the company is in effect going to be liquidated. I think seeing the department are here, let them just, you know, continue, and they try and explain what's the difference between what they hope that the new 21 company is going to achieve as opposed to the one that's been closed down.
Thank you, Honourable Worth. Let me welcome Honourable Mabe in the meeting. Honourable Mporo?
Chair, I don't think Honourable Worth's suggestion is going to help us. I don't think it is going to help us, because already there's no basic substance on the report. We are just sitting here listening to explanation that has got no foundation. Now, what do we expect to hear at the end of the explanation which has got no substance? I don't think there's anything that is going to assist us.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mporo. That's just Thank you, Honorable Mporo. That's why they say there is no financial analysis, because there is no... You wanted to say something? Because I've just said that you wanted to talk.
Yes? Sure, I'm sorry. My suggestion has already been said.
I don't know.
Why should we ensue into a prolonged discussion when really the suggestion has already been supported?
The suggestion has been supported. And I was also in that view, also to say that they must come up with a clear documentation, and also to give us what is it. Because what can we discuss? Because there's no accountability, there's nothing. So what are we going to achieve? There's nothing that we're going to achieve in this document. There's nothing that we're going to achieve. I don't know whether you want to argue on that.
Honourable Chair, and Honourable Wap, maybe I can just give an indication, and hopefully it will clarify issues. This Section 21 company that was formed, as the CEO mentioned, is a separate entity. It's separate from government. The only link that it had to government was the money, the taxpayers' money, and that essentially was a problem. From a legal perspective, you have two regimes that govern that company. So because it's a Section 21 company, it falls under the Companies Act. It's got its own board. It does its own thing financially. It's almost like an entity, but it's separate from government in the sense that it's more independent than the entities.
the entities are at least accountable to us because they're bound by the PFMA, whereas a Section 21 company is a separate unit. It's like almost like a private company outside of government. The problem was that we as government were funding this company. Hence, the PFMA makes us accountable for that money. So in that sense, that's one of the reasons why this Section 21 company, which was established with business and the unions and whatever, historically. And most of the officials sitting here only became involved in the process at a later stage. We then found out that the company is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. Hence, it's a problem for us as government because we're using taxpayers' money to fund this Section 21 company. The next step would be then we must see what we can do to rectify the situation. In other words, the three scenarios that we considered in the presentation is how we had deliberated that we were going to deal with this. And in terms of how we were going to deal with this, the preferred option would be to wind up that company, which is what we're presenting now. That's where KPMG comes in.
Okay.
Let me just bring another point, which really motivate me not to waste time here and listen to rubbish. There is a memorandum of understanding between Department of Environmental Affairs and BUISA. Why at that time when this was entered into, consideration was not given to plan? You know, the basic thing is plans, to plan, not to come and tell us that it was a complete independent company, but you are the funding people. But how can you give money to someone who is independent and does not have to come back to you and account for the use of money? So my point is around this memorandum of understanding, which to me, it should have been able to capture all these things.
Okay. Thank you. I think we must not debate that. I'm just closing the debate. Because why did the department release money without any strategic plan? So that's why we are not happy about this. We are totally not happy. I think you must go out again and come with a clear documentation and also clear presentation to us. And then I think I'll ask the next presentation to present. Otherwise, for you guys,
for guidance from the committee. I think, you know, some of the questions, because I think we mustn't confuse a strategic plan with a business plan. Our MOA say that we would, but I don't want to dwell in that, as you said, Jay, but I think what the dilemma for us as officials is that the committee asked the minister that the department come and present on the achievements, the finance, da-da-da-da, for BUISA back. The minister responded stating, we cannot present on those things because this company is ceasing to exist. Therefore, we will come, and that is in the minister's letter, and will present to the committee what is this winding up process all about, what led to this winding up process, and what are we doing in winding up this process, and how are we seeking to honor the original objectives for why this company has been established. And that is what we have presented. And I think it's very difficult for us to go back now because that is our instruction from the minister to come and explain to the committee the winding up of this company and taking forward the objectives of this process. So what we can do as officials is we can provide you with the detailed review report, which we've tried to summarize in the presentation, which tell you what are all of the aspects that we've done in the review, which we, in terms of our MOU with BUISA back, our MOU is around the funding, it's not around the governance. In terms of our MOU, said two important things, it says more than that. But it says, once the funding will only be transferred on the approved business plan, and that has been, business plan look at a year, a strategic plan look at where we're going to. So what we have been doing is approving what the funding is being spent on a year per the MOU, as based on the MOU on the business plan for that specific year. The board is responsible in terms of the Companies Act for the strategic visioning going forward. The second thing that we have done in terms of the MOU is that we can terminate the funding with a 6 months notification. And that we've done in March of this year, where we said to them, no more government funding is coming to you because we cannot see value for money for the taxpayer. So the company then, as an independent Section 21 non-for-profit company, had options. Their options was find money elsewhere and continue because they're an independent company, or go the liquidation route. That was their options. We say winding up from our side as an offer to the company was to say that would prevent the job losses, A. B, make sure that the objectives continue. So we assisted the company by saying we're not going to give you any more money, but we would assist you in your winding up so that the original objectives of the NetLag MOU can be honored. Now, that is, we can give you the review report, but we won't be coming back and standing in for the company here ever, because it is not the role of government to be the accountable authority legally for a Section 21 company. The board of that company and the company is accountable in terms of the section, in terms of the Companies Act. So we can come back to you and tell you what our process is from an accountability perspective around the money, and we can do that in more detail. But in terms of the accountability and governance of the company, us as a department can never respond to that. We cannot, because it's not our legal role and mandate.
Okay, I think the guidance that I'm going to give you is that give us the review document and the MOU, and we'll write back to the minister. You want to say something?
Yeah. I just want to say that we do not request you to come and stand here on behalf of the company. That's not our ask. Our request is that the time when you entered into memorandum of understanding as a government and using taxpayers' money, all possible aspects that are going to be, you know, within this company should have been taken into consideration. And apparently there was a gross negligence of that fact. And therefore, I feel there's no way we can accept this brief.
What we're going to do now, we're going to listen to the second presentation, because we said we are not happy about yours.
Thank you, Chair. I will then ask the CEO of SANB to take you through the SANB presentation.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Tanya Abramsa. I'm the CEO of the South African National Biodiversity Institute, and I'm accompanied here by Chris Willis, who is head of the gardens part of SANB. Because, Chair, and you can reprimand me for being over-eager, because this is the first time that we're really presenting to you in the time that I've been the CEO, I might be in danger of giving you too much information about SANB, but I thought that it would be a good idea to sketch who we are and what we are in the context of the of last year and the questions that you asked us to provide. So the contents of my presentation, I want to talk to you and tell you a little bit about our role and mandate and vision, mission and values, and our goal, our strategic goal, and the programs in our corporate strategic plan, and some of our key achievements in the last 2010-11 financial year, and also to talk with you about some of the key challenges that we face as an institute and as a sector. Just in brief, SANB, the South African National Biodiversity Institute, is a national and international leading biodiversity institution, and it leads for South Africa research, knowledge, information on threatened species, ecosystems, GMO impacts, bioadaptation to climate change, a very wide range of knowledge generation work that we do. We aim to provide the best scientific-based evidence and best practice models for policy advice to government at all levels and to society. And we support conservation and sustainable use of biodiversity for human well-being and help unlock the potential value and benefits of our biodiversity for development. We harness scientific capacity, and this is an important issue here, Chair. South Africa, like every other developing country, has actually, on the human capital side, we have a net scarce resource around scientific inquiry and scientific research. And so what we do as an institute, instead of building a huge empire, we actually have relationships with other research institutions. We sign MOUs with UKZN, with UCT, with Venda University, with and we hope to sign with the Technology University of Tshwane, for example. And we harness the scientific capacity and lead it rather than do the science ourselves and ensure that the quality is there and that it is evidence-based, the information that comes out of it. And we, in this way, ensure cooperation and alignment and cost-saving across the whole system to provide sound government biodiversity policy advice. We also lead the human capital development in the biodiversity sector. I'm sure I don't have to tell you, Chair, members, that the history of South Africa, particularly for historically disadvantaged individuals, that apartheid education didn't actually generate many people with skills in the science field. And so it's in our act and in the National Strategic Action Plan for Biodiversity, which is a cabinet-approved strategy, it's that we are responsible for leading the human capacity development process in our sector. And of course, we can't do this on our own, so we do it together with other institutions, and I'll talk a little bit about that. I think you will be particularly interested in that work that we do and how far we've got, because I think it's key for the sustainability of our sector that we encourage more and more people, particularly the majority of our people, to be involved in our sector in one way or the other. But finally, Chair and members, you probably know us more because of the gardens, and it's one of those things. At the back end, the work that we do is often not seen. The front end of the work we do is the 9 National Botanical Gardens that we manage. Of course, you would know Kirsten Bosch, but I hope that you have seen some of our other National Botanical Gardens. Walter Sisulu in Roodepoort is particularly beautiful. The Lofout in Nelspruit. We have one in Huntum in the Northern Cape. They are seen to be windows into biodiversity, and particularly because they mainly, well, 8 of the 9 National Botanical Gardens are actually based near urban areas. So they are urban people's windows into biodiversity. You can't afford to go to a national park, basically. We are expanding the National Botanical Garden system from 9. There are 2 on the way, the Eastern Cape one, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, and then Limpopo afterwards. But it is National Botanical Gardens, apart from being a place for leisure and education and recreation and religion and culture and tourism, but increasingly they are becoming shelters for threatened and endangered plant species, and provide a range of decent and skilled jobs in the horticulture and biodiversity sector. The source of our mandate, Chair, is just very briefly, I thought it important to tell you about how our mandate, how we get to do the job we do. First of all, we're a public entity under the Department of Environment Affairs, and we were established by an act called the Biodiversity Act in 2004, on the foundations of the National Botanical Institute, which I think many of you might know. And the shift from the National Botanical Institute to SAMBI was basically a greatly expanded legal mandate. We also take our mandate from the Minister's letter of 2004, which accompanied the Act, and of course subsequent instructions that the Minister might give us. We also participate in the Presidential Outcome 10, in support of the department, and also our name is mentioned there as an institute on its own. We have a 5-year rolling corporate strategic plan, which is based on cabinet-approved the MBSAP, the National Biodiversity Strategic Action Plan, which was approved by DIA and the minister annually. We have an annual performance plan, which is based on the above, and the department and minister approve it, and the department monitors it. We also have signed a governance protocol with the DG of DIA and our board, and we also support international agreements. For example, I give you a few examples there, the Convention on Biological Diversity, the UN Climate Convention, the UNFCCC. We're so used to doing the acronym, I've forgotten what the word is, and the UNCCD, which is the Convention on Desertification. And then we also help government to achieve Millennium Goal, particularly Goal 7. Our vision, and it's an important vision because I think our history has meant that our biodiversity riches has not been for all people. So our vision is to increasingly make biodiversity richness for all South Africans. Our values, I think you've got that. I don't think we have to go through that except to say that it was done through consultation with the whole organization, all the way from semi-skilled garden workers to Nobel Prize-winning scientists. And this is the values that we came up with as an organization, and it spells Ugreat, Usambi, Ugreat. Our mission is to champion the exploration, conservation, sustainable use, appreciation, enjoyment of this exceptionally rich biodiversity for all people. We are either the third or the fourth most biodiverse country in the world, depending on how you angle it. From in terms of plants, we have a whole plant kingdom of our own that doesn't exist anywhere else. It is the foundation for our nation, for our development, for our state, and for the pride that we have in South Africa. And I think that we want to be at the forefront of ensuring that we get maximum value in a sustainable way from this amazing asset that we've got. So in doing that, we want to be strategically positioned, want to be in the middle of the biodiversity sector, so that we can harness our capacity and that we would be the first port of call for knowledge and information and policy advice on biodiversity in the country. That is what we hope we want to be, and that's what we're working towards and our strategic goal. We achieve this through 6 programs. We do a lot, and it actually was very difficult, and the department helped us enormously in taking what is a very large, wide legal mandate and boiling it down to manageable 6 programs. So the first one is really about understanding biodiversity, and of course that underpins all our research work, all our information gathering. The other part of program one is to look at the bioadaptation to climate change. 10 years ago, this institution or its forebears was already researching on the climate change impact on biodiversity, on ecosystems, on plant species. And so we had a running start before it became flavor of the month, the climate change. So we have actually got sunken capacity in terms of people and models that we've developed around climate change adaptation and climate change impact on our biodiversity. The second program is looking at what we call biome-based biodiversity programs. And some of you might know the CAPE program, which was looking, particularly working in the Fynbos kingdom. We also work with Succulent Karoo. As you know, the Succulent Karoo, another iconic, unique group of plants that are found in the Northern Cape mainly. And we have a number of programs. The third program I want to just mention is the work that we do on grasslands. As you know, even though grasslands looks like it's not biodiverse, in fact, it seemed to be one of the most valuable ecosystems in the world, our grassland system. In addition, we also work on the wetlands, and we have a wetlands program. So just to give you a sense of some of the work that we do. Then the third program, fairly high up in our priorities, is the work we do with the National Botanical Garden System. It is what we are well known for. Kirstenbosch, for example, is globally known, but our other gardens are also just amazing. And Chris Willis is the head of the garden system. And our aim here is to expand and strengthen the National Botanical Gardens and make it relevant for local populations, particularly urban populations.
Sorry for interruption.
Yeah.
You must come shortly because there's another presentation. At 7:30, you must be through with your present also questions.
Okay. Then we provide policy advice to government and society. We also work on human capital development. I talked a little bit about that, and we have effective systems and processes and hopefully resources to fulfill the mandate. I wanted to quickly go through some key achievements. I've boxed it into some different programs. I think you're not really interested in that. I think let me just try and highlight, even though these are highlights, programs that might impact on the work that you do. The one I wanted to put here was some of the work we've done on land degradation and biodiversity to support DAF policy. We also have bursaries for MSc students and postdoc students at fairly high value, particularly for the grasslands program. What you might be interested in, Chair, is that the work we're doing with the EIA data. If you will know, there's quite a hue and cry about the fact that the environmental impact assessment or the Environmental Impact Act or the National Environmental Management Act is a break to development. And what we wanted to do was to work and make business more efficient and quicker. So we developed a data collection tool using EIA information, and we have been training government officials and EIA practitioners and scientists so that we don't make such a long mission every time we do an EIA when we want to do development. We worked with the law enforcement officers on threatened species. We've developed a tool on that. The Biodiversity Indicator Report, which is a national requirement, we've engaged with Stats South Africa to put biodiversity targets in our national statistical accounting system and to mainstream biodiversity instead of it being a side issue all the time. And then we also are responsible for reporting on the impact of GMOs on genetically modified organisms on biodiversity. And the very first report on the impact of BT maize on biodiversity and a monitoring framework was done this past year. I won't go into any more details. The other big event this last year was the fact that we produced a red list, which is an IUCN global mechanism for identifying threatened species. We are the first mega country to do that, and we did a red list for all South African plants. The other important area I'd wish you to look in my presentation on the range of interesting work that we've done on marine biodiversity. And finally, the national freshwater ecosystem priority areas. Another issue which is a hot topic is the water management, water quality, etc., is the work that we led and we, with DEA and the Department of Water Affairs, CSIR, which has now been accepted as policy. I'm just looking very quickly about some of the ones that sort of step off the page here. I think, interestingly, we worked with De Beers on their offshore mining to identify priority areas for biodiversity management and with PetroSA on the Gullah Bank, all in the hope that we give business tools and data and information that will make their business management better to protect the environment. You can look at my presentation, but I think the issue you might be interested on this slide is the publication of a document which we launched at CBD COP10 in Japan called Biodiversity for Development to Greater Claim. We had the highest number of visitors to the National Botanical Gardens. Our new park, we've signed an agreement with Eastern Cape Parks. Anybody of you from Eastern Cape would be quite excited. It will be in Kwelenge Nature Reserve near East London. We work together with other African botanical gardens in a network. On the policy advice, we've given a range of policy advice, and I won't go into the details, except I think the one that stands out for me is the completion of the second National Communication Report,
to the UNFCCC, which is completed by us, has gone to for cabinet approval and forms the basis of the white paper. And then I've got a few pictures, but I won't go into that. In terms of the network and human capital development, we've done quite an enormous amount, and the thing that stepped up for me here is the very first biodiversity human capital development skills summit, which was held in this past year, which we did with all the relevant role players, universities, and a whole lot of other players. I won't go into effective systems, and I think you will see the slide how we contribute to the various international obligations. You can also look at financial highlights. If you would, and let me quickly go to the challenges. The challenges really have been financial resources. Our NTF grant, which we get via the department, has either been cut or been stagnant over the last 5 years, despite the fact that we've been given a greatly expanded mandate, legal mandate, and there's been high inflation in terms of wages. And just let me pause you on the wages. We're a public entity. We comply with the negotiated wage that the government negotiates with the main trade unions, and that is the wage that we accept. Electricity, as you know, has gone up by 25% and other goods and services. And in addition to that, there's been a global reduction in donor-funded projects due to the global recession. And many of our projects and many of the work we did were, in fact, global donor-funded, World Bank, UNDP, Norwegians, etc. The other challenge is the fact that we still struggle, all of us, in the environment sector, in the biodiversity sector, with highlighting that this is a place you can have a career and a job. This is where green jobs can occur. Tourism, nature-based tourism, is what drives us. It is potentially a great place to get a job, have a career, be part of economic growth. We still struggle with that, all of us. And we, particularly among the majority of our people, and there is a legacy issue around biodiversity, and we work constantly to overcome that. And finally, because of lack of resources, mainly, I think that we haven't positioned ourselves as a sector or as an institution effectively, positioning and awareness, and that therefore is a challenge for us to raise our national profile, not only for SAMBI, but for the biodiversity sector as a whole. And then I've just got a slide on our financial position for the last 5 years. You might be pleased to see the purple line, which shows the expenditure catching up with our income. For a little while, we were in deficit. We have a sustainability a strategy. We have contained costs very seriously. We've had no new posts, no filling of posts that have become vacant that have happened. There's been natural attrition, but no redundancies. We've spoken with DIA and the National Treasury and making an argument for a cash injection and an increase in our NTF grant. And we are hoping that COP17 will use COP17, the UNFCCC COP17, as a profile-raising opportunity. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I think I don't want to waste time. I'll go straight to the members to ask some questions. I will start from Honorable Mabe, Honorable West, Honorable Mabe. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Dr. Aframan, for the presentation. Actually, you are last to last. Partly responded to my first question. I wanted to ask you, what are the possibilities of you influencing the current curriculum? Because when I read the document, you are only involved at institutions of higher learning. But I think from primary school, from high school, that's where we can start introducing that, because of the same issue that you said, because of the potential of creating green jobs, and you don't have to be at the university level to do some of the things. And your only involvement is on research. What else are you doing in terms of capacity building and capacity development? The second issue is about visibility. I think communities generally, they don't know about you. In Gauteng province, I am interested, you only mentioned what was the port of the province?
Victoria Gardens and what this is for Lauren and housing.
Okay. I will give you my details so that maybe I can also get the work, the kind of jobs that you do there, and maybe also liaise with the legislature to check if really they're happy with the kind of service that you provide for them. You also mentioned about EIAs. I want to know, you did not actually explain your specific role as to what is your role with regard to EIAs. If you do have influence, especially on development, you know, projects that concern development of the people you are housing and all that, if you do have a say, I want to know whether you have time frames with regard to that. Vis-a-vis the report that you get from EIAs, how reliable are they? I will tell you why I'm saying that. In Simobile, in Krugersdorp, EIAs were approved as a housing development, but I don't know, if it is not your role, it's fine. But only to find that EIAs have been approved, they have built houses on a mine dump. So it's a problem now for the community. So if it is not your role, it's fine. Your role also, you also mentioned your involvement with the mines and the banks. Are you also encouraging them to also to protect the environment, because the mines are really polluting, they are destroying our land. And with regard to finances, I think it needs an out of the box solution. You know, you need to consider triple P if you haven't actually done that. You cannot forever rely on government to give you money. Come up with projects that you can actually get private sector to contribute, especially the mines and the banks, because already you do have a relationship with them. But we leave that just a suggestion. Thanks, Chair. I'm sorry for the phone.
Thank you, Senator.
Full
more questions.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Of course, most botanical gardens do not generate enough money to be self-sustaining, except for personal Bosch, which I see here. And even having said that, I see you mentioned it here, that Chelsea is the show, there are other institutions that have to come to help to present this year. I hope next year is taken better care of. The slide went past very quickly on the financial position. We know it's not doesn't generate anywhere near enough funds, but as I said, knowing the world of that fact, but what is actually spent in total on these botanical gardens, whether they're self-sufficient or not, except for Thurston Bosch, and the shortfall? I saw an amount mentioned of 27 million that you're appealing for. Is this to take anticipate increase in wages, salaries, or what is that amount exactly for? Sorry, that's my new comment. Thanks.
Thank you, Doctor, for the presentation. It's quite substantial. And here you can actually detect that the institute is on the ground, it's working. It's quite clear that the institute is working on the ground. quite a number of questions have already been asked by Honorable Mahabir. What I would like to know is, you also here you are offering scholarship for gathering and gathering for MSc and PhDs. I would like to know, so far, how many scholars have you offered this gathering of the MSc and the PhDs? And more or less the time scale, how long does it take to start from MSc up to PhD? How many years do you have to spend at university, and whether the 300,000 rand is sufficient? Because at that level, I should think that the scholar has to get some stipend for self-existing, whether it is also included in that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Koro. I would also feel
one or two questions. What percentage of funding is from donor funding, and how much is funded by the government? The other one, why has the department received the funding model of funding? They are reduced, reduced. And the other one, what strategies has the department put in place to address these challenges? Because there are some challenges. I want the strategies. Do you have any strategies to put in place? One question. Okay.
Yeah, thank you,
Chair.
I don't know whether you also do, you know, where mining are operating. If you are doing it, I would also just refer you to a place in the Northern Cape about 65 kilometers from Kimberley, if you know Kimberley, called Schmidtsburg.
Yeah.
There's lots of mining going on there. And the concern is that these people, with the manner in which they rehabilitate, it is unacceptable. Because we have also heard from people from the Department of Agriculture telling us where they have rehabilitated. It will take 30 years before that soil can be used for any productive. So that I'm just checking whether you are doing mining operations, and if you are doing it, I would then, if you have not been there, refer you to go there and just do a physical checkup. Thank you.
Another from Coral, can you ask? Oh,
sorry. Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether this question was asked while I was outside meeting, but if it is so, you pardon me. I want to comment about the job creation part of this presentation. I don't feel it. I don't know what's going on with your plan of job creation. Thank you.
Chair, I'm thinking of just answering your question first and put the report on the slide. The basic government grant constitutes 46% of our total income. It has increased 7% over the previous year. This is for the history of it not being increased, in fact flatlining, but even 7% increase doesn't cover some of the increases on operational costs that have occurred. You're right, Member Worth, that whatever we do, we only really in the end receive about 8% of total income from GOM. We're not like the national parks where they've got beds where they can people sleep over and you can give our prices. This is a walk-through facility, and I think that we are of the view that if we raise the price, we will actually stop low-income people from being able to enter. So we will not raise the price. We have to think of another way, as the Honourable Member Murray said, think out of the box about how to get another income stream. We also get income stream from rent, from restaurants and concessionaires, and that has increased over time. But again, you can't milk that cow. You will milk it to the detriment of that facility. So I think, Honourable Mari, we must come and talk with you because we think out of the box, but we public services, sometimes we can't do that. A lot of our projects have come from donor money, and there's often you think it's only international donors. We do have international donors, but actually it's South African government donors that give us money to do projects for them. Like Water Research Council, we do some of their work. We work, EPWP, we work on some of their work. Agriculture gives us work to do. Forestry gives us work to do. So Water Affairs gives us work to do. So we get quite a lot of non-MTS money, but it's projects, and they are ring-fenced to do that project. They don't pay the electricity and the water bill. And that's the problem. And I hope that I therefore answered your question, Chair. Yes, we work very closely with the Department of Environment Affairs. They are very supportive in assisting us. We work together on strategies to overcome the challenge of funding and financing. And in fact, we're working together now. We're making a proposal for the MTEC committee. And we're very hopeful that that will change. Let me just go quickly through Member Mare's question. Influencing current curriculum. I'm sorry, I did skip very fast through the presentation. And one of the work that we've done is to look at what they call conservation and biodiversity messages in the national curriculum of basic education. And so we sit together with my colleague who's head of education, family education, Vivian Malema, sits on the committee, the curriculum development committee for the Department of Basic Education. In addition to that, our gardens, I said it later, most of the beneficiaries, so-called beneficiaries of our garden, apart from visitors walking through our gates, are school kids at primary school who come and spend a day doing environment studies, biodiversity studies, and that's what we're very well known for. What has always been my view, though, is it's very nice, been going on for many years, but how many of those kids become natural scientists? And so that's the follow-through that we wanted to participate more in. So while we continue with our schools program, we really think that engaging with the curriculum, engaging with those students when they're a little bit older, when they're making decisions about their matric studies, when they're in their in university, etc. So we do that.
Mentoring, you need to develop that strategy.
We do not engage with the EIAs except in support for the department. It would be a conflict of interest for us. So we don't engage with it. What we do is we provide science-based information for the department to make a decision on the one hand, and we hope that we will make the EIAs more popular by business, so that when business goes into the website, our biodiversity advisor, and sees the area they want to develop, and they see it's a threatened ecosystem, a threatened species, there's water problems there, they won't even think about going there, and they'll go somewhere else. So that's our role with the EIAs. I think you asked the question, and I think the chair also asked the question. So our role is in support of EIAs, but on the Smith-Drift matter, it has actually come to our attention, actually from the Smith-Drift community, and so we are speaking with the Department of Agriculture about what's happening there. But I will also check on it. And I'm suggesting, Member Mokoro, some of the questions that you asked, one of our listenerships about the bursaries and the PhDs and how many and the time scale and the interns and the volunteers that we also have, all about capacity building, mentoring, supporting, giving confidence to young people to be active in our sector. I'll write you a full-scale report. The $300,000 I mentioned there was only for one of our programs, the grasslands program. It's such an important biome, an ecosystem, and there's such a lack of understanding in the country about it. We always use foreigners, actually, who seem to understand our own grasslands better than us. So we've actually focused a lot in building a cadre, particularly of black scientists, in understanding what's happening with this grassland, which is so unique for South Africa. So I want to write you a full report on the full thing, and I'll send it to the chair, but not only because I think Member Mabe was also interested in what we do around mentoring and interns, etc. And I think that will do it justice. I don't want to just talk off the top of my head. So our involvement with mining companies is that we provide the public, and I would love you to go into our website and look under the Biodiversity Advisor and see what amazing information you can get. And so we encourage the mining industry to look at that information so that they don't make the mistake before they even before it comes into the public. Because a lot of it is about not understanding the matter. So we have that, making budgets easy, global mining companies, out-of-the-box thinking, with job creation. I'll come to Member Worth's point about the 27 million in a minute. What are we doing around job creation? We have, together with a whole number of institutions and organizations in our sector, including private organizations or an NGO organization, have put a proposal for green jobs in the Department of Environment Affairs as well. We brought everybody together to put a very big proposal to the Jobs Fund about creating a number of jobs. One of the things we discovered, and you know what happens is, in my view, okay, we talk a lot about jobs, but in fact, what we discovered in our research before we started, before we put in the proposal, is that there's something like 47,000 public sector environmental green biodiversity jobs standing empty in the whole country. And so our first phase of the green jobs is not to create new jobs, but to fit the people into those jobs, because there's a problem there. Apparently the turnover is so huge in environmental and biodiversity jobs at all levels, even at local government, provincial government, national government, and in the public entity. And the, our research shows that it's not that there isn't public sector jobs in the sector, it's just that there aren't the people to fit. And there are unemployed graduates who are unable to do the job because their university training doesn't give them the ability to do that. So we are setting up what we call an incubator with people like WESA, WWF, DEA, Water Affairs, etc. And we're going to incubate these young people in the institution. Sammy itself, who is leading, but will also accept about 300 young graduates. I mean, can you believe graduates, unemployed, unable to find work? To incubate them into filling those posts. That will be phase one. Let's not go too big, be too ambitious. The jobs are already there, they just we just can't find the people to fit. So the that's job creation. And if there's any more information I can provide, and it's very exciting. The 27 million, we, despite our stringent cost cutting, we have, for example, we had spent quite a lot of money in the previous years on international travel because we're a very well-known institution. For example, we stopped spending money on international travel, and lo and behold, everybody invited us and paid. So that was great. So we've got stringent cost-cutting measures. We have employed no new person, not even critical posts. We've done internal employment and used it as a moment for people to be promoted out of their positions rather than go outside. We are finding a few critical posts where people have retired, which is beginning to hamper the organization. So that despite all our best efforts, we, with our cost cutting, we feel that we need at least 27 million to right-size our budget in order to fulfill our mandate properly. But it's been an interesting year, two years of belt tightening and tight belt. You know, no one ever goes business class, travel one time, no one does international travel, we don't have big parties catering, we don't have big conferences. It's been actually a very good exercise, but we are in danger of destroying the fabric of the organization, particularly in terms of some key skills that we need.
But you all look nice and clean.
That's the upside of belt tightening. So thank you. I hope that's okay. Thank you very much. I think okay.
One question that I'm not to with. I think there was a question with regard to the EIA support as to how reliable those supports are.
I just wanted to, as I mentioned, our role is to support the department in making the decision about the EIAs. I don't know if you want to answer that question.
Maybe before she responds, I want to make sure that I understand. The department will refer the report to you, then you're okay. Is that your own? Okay. All right.
Not at all.
Chair, I'll just comment on two things. I think the one thing that the committee may want to consider is to actually ask our branch of biodiversity to come and brief the committee on the work that they are doing on mining specifically, because they're busy doing guidelines around rehabilitation, around mining and biodiversity specifically. And I know that they're working with Stanley on that. So I think that might be a good area that the committee might be interested in, if there's that big interest in mining specifically. In terms of the EIAs, the reliability of the reports is generally a concern in terms of the EIA system, and you might know that we've very recently had our first conviction against an environmental consultant for providing government with misleading information, and there was actually a conviction issued by a court, because it's a criminal offence in terms of the EIA regulations to provide incomplete, incorrect or misleading information. The second thing that we are doing about that as government is to regulate environmental assessment practitioners. And the minister has just launched in March this year the Environmental Assessment Practitioner Association. Sean left, unfortunately, for South Africa. And they have submitted an application to the minister to become a registration authority, which is similar to other professions where you need to be registered and where there is then a code of ethics and misconduct can then. So in addition to it being a criminal offence, it is also now an ethical offence. So we are correcting that slowly but surely in terms of, but it is a grave concern.
How much it actually costs to run the gardens at the national network currently. We currently have 360 permanent personnel across the 9 gardens. The personnel cost is 65 million for a year. The operating cost is 20 million. We generate our own income of about 35 to 40 million per annum. We also generate a lot of other income through sponsorships, donations, through corporate sector, NGOs for specific development, and also a lot of support from here, also through the EPWP program, where we've been able to build education centres in the gardens that we can actually host learners and teachers for biodiversity linked curriculum work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you
very
much. I think you must send us every information that we have according to the job. Please send us all the information, because we don't have anything. Thank you very much for your presentation and also deliberation. Thank you very much. Just because of, we don't have time, we are going to Ingonyama Trust. For Ingonyama Trust, yes, we didn't receive any documents.